Final 30 minutes of the program here. Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 6:30. Hawks pregame. Then they're in New Orleans to take on a two-win Zion-less Pelican squad. That should be a nice little get-right game for them as they've dropped their last couple after a really, really hot West Coast swing. Appreciate everybody who called in. We took a ton of phone calls today on the future of the Falcons coaching staff. If you didn't get a chance to weigh in, 404-726-0929 is the number as always. And also hit me up on Twitter at C Thomas Radio. Our buddy Eric checked in. He had a question. He said, hey, Turtle, do you think what the projection will be on what the wide receiver core looks like tomorrow, Hodge, Mooney, and Sills? And I said, well, I actually think it's Bijan, Pitts, and Mooney in that order. The reason I say that is with Mooney's struggles, although he did have a great rapport with Kirk last year, they have to get that established again. So I think that moves Bijan up to your primary receiver. They have put him out straight up as a wideout a couple of times this year. I think you'll see more of that tomorrow with Algier in the backfield and also, of course, him catching it out of the backfield. Pitts is going to have to step up. We talked about it with Will McFadden earlier in the show. Download the Chris Thomas Tonight podcast if you missed that interview. He needs to step up, man, in a huge way, not only for this game. He needs a contract. It's not going to be here, but, you know, he needs to make himself some money over the last seven games. And then I think Mooney will get the chances before guys like Sills and Hodge and Casey Washington and whoever else is going to be brought up. So that's the state of this team right now, unfortunately. 404-726-0929. We did have producer Dom take over for Josh, who did a great job earlier in the show screening your calls and setting up a great conversation on the phones. Dom, before we get into a producer six-pack, something happened to me yesterday that's never happened to me before.
All right, talk to me.
It was not fun. I got stuck in an elevator.
Oh, yeah, that's happened to me, I think, twice.
That was awful.
Well, how long was it?
So here's what happened. My building is notorious for elevator problems. We have three elevators, and I've lived there. It'll be 5 years in February. I'd say 30% of the time I've lived there, all three have been working. So the overwhelming majority of the time, we're down at least an elevator, which is awful in a 17-floor building that I live in that is used 24/7, 365 by people.
Right, right.
So there's always been elevator problems. But when I got on yesterday, it was me and two other guys around my age. They were going, I think, to the 16th floor, and I live on the 10th floor of my building. We get to the 10th floor, and the elevator door cracks open just a little bit, and then it shuts again. So I was like, okay, maybe I just need to push the door open button. I do that. Elevator opens just a crack again and then shuts. It does that one more time before then doing nothing. So now the three of us sort of look at each other. I'm closest to the wall with all the buttons on it.
Right.
They start to freak out immediately. They're like, what do we do? What do we do? I don't know if they lived in the building. They maybe were visiting somebody. So I don't know if they know protocols or whatever. So I hit the emergency phone button, and it gives an automated message. And then nothing happens. Okay, so now we're sitting there. The one guy, there were two guys, he had a sweatshirt on when he got into the elevator.
Oh, terrible, terrible decision.
He rips that thing off, and he is profusely sweating on his forehead, I guess because he's nervous.
Nervous, but also it's a confined space. You don't realize how quickly that just turns into a metal box.
Yeah. So this is probably now minute three that we're going on.
right.
And I push the call button again. The same automated message repeats, and nothing happens. Okay. Minute four. Continue to just sit there and grin and bear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Minute five. Continue to just sit there and grin and bear it, and then without doing anything, nobody ever responded on the call, around minute six and a half, the doors just opened and we were able to get out. And they literally ran out and said, we're taking the stairs up to the 16th floor. Luckily for me, it was on my floor that the elevator landed. So I was good. I didn't need to worry about it. But that 6.5 minute stretch felt like an eternity. As you said, the elevator temperature in those 6.5 minutes must have skyrocketed 25 degrees.
Absolutely.
And then just the sheer like panic of we're pushing the emergency button, nothing's happening. We're getting an automated message, but nobody's picking up. We have no idea what's going to happen, and we have no idea how long we're going to be here. It was an absolutely horrifying experience, and I hope if it's never happened to you, you never have to go through it.
Yeah, it makes you realize how quickly or how slowly time moves. You don't realize how long 6 minutes feels until you're sitting in a very cramped, hot elevator suspended like 600 feet above the ground. I think it's happened. It's actually happened to me once here, leaving work, and it was late at night, which kind of freaked me out a little bit because I was really worried that like, all right, so like, what if like security's just sleep? Like, cause it is kind of late.
Yeah.
And so like, I'm sitting there and I actually was on there for about 10 minutes and then they finally were able to get someone to come on down and get me off. But yeah, thankfully it was just me in there. So I didn't have the worry of other people kind of freaking out too, because that's what will make it worse. You got someone else who starts to panic, and then that kind of encourages everyone to panic. So
yeah, the one dude was His friend was
ripping off the sweatshirt 3 minutes in.
He was sweating bullets. I mean, like rivulets of sweat down his forehead. So yeah, so that was not fun yesterday for anyone who hasn't experienced it. Count your lucky stars, and for those who have, if you know. You know. All right, with that out of the way, let's get some producer six-pack questions here.
It's time for the producer six-pack on Chris Thomas Tonight.
Six questions and six questions to produce greatness
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All righty. So, stepping in here, Chris Turtle Thomas, I got six questions for you. Starting with these Hawks, since we are going to be listening to them shortly here.
Yeah.
Hawks have been playing pretty good. Hawks have actually been playing really well.
Well, not the last couple of games.
Not the last couple of games.
Overall, yeah.
But overall, especially given that Trae Young is out, they played well. Jalen Johnson seems to be ascending. And you do have what will probably end up being a top five pick with how New Orleans is moving.
I don't think probably.
So, given the fact that you have this draft capital, given the fact that the team is playing well, I'm not saying that they should be trying to trade him, but does this at least make you a little bit more amicable with the idea that, hey, you know what, we can move on from Trae Young and it's not a tragedy?
Well, for a couple of reasons, I gotta say, yeah. One, because they didn't give it to him in the offseason, which is a telltale sign of where things stand right now. And number two, it's a lot of money, especially if it's the max. And is that the best decision for your team long term? I don't know. Let's see how much longer he's out and how well they play versus who.
Yeah.
And then you'll have a better idea of what the situation's going to look like. I'm not going to sit here and say the team is better without Trae Young on it. That's stupid. But can you make an argument for the fact you have potentially a number one overall pick, depending on how bad the Pelicans are, and you have this core of young talent, and could you trade for a quote-unquote missing piece? Yeah,
maybe
you could.
Maybe that Giannis trade isn't so crazy now.
I never thought it was crazy. My whole thing with the Giannis idea is like, why would he come here?
Well, like, if you're a team
now,
that's what I'm saying.
But
now,
back then, it was like, why would he come here now?
Yeah, now
maybe
it's interesting. It's maybe a thought at least. All righty, next up. So you talked about the Falcons coaching staff earlier, and I haven't been here. I've been listening, obviously, but I haven't been able to be in on the conversation. I remember throwing out a name a couple weeks ago because I it was kind of on the hot seat and that it was mentioned that he might be fired. Well, one guy has been fired, and that's Brian Daboll. My question to you, no matter what, whether it's as an offensive coordinator or maybe even the new head coach, Brian Daboll needs to be on this coaching staff next season.
Definitely not head coach. That's a non-starter for me. Offensive coordinator, giddy up. Yeah. You saw what he was doing with Jackson Dart.
And Josh Allen.
And Josh Allen before that. Absolute. Why not? Why not?
All right. See, I like that we're on the same page there, because that does lead me into the next question about the Falcons.
Okay.
Regarding the quarterback, even if you do bring in Brian Daboll, obviously Michael Penix Jr., even if he does come back with the earliest estimations being 9 months, which I feel like, in all honesty, would be a mistake, even if he
is. Yeah, I asked Will McFadden about that. I was like, where did this nine-month thing start? Apparently, it was an Ian Rappaport tweet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good source there, but that just seems really optimistic.
It's very optimistic, but also, I think, even if it... I don't even know why you would take an aggressive approach. This is a guy who has had five season-ending injuries in the last 8 years. I don't know if this is the time where you want to be like, hey, yeah, you definitely need to rush back from this ACL injury.
Well, you know the reason that you do? If the coaches keep their job.
And
they're given a playoff mandate.
That leads me to my next question, though, because with Michael Penix Jr.'s injury concerns, is it time for the Falcons to maybe start scouting that 2026 or 2027 quarterback class?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I talked about it's fine. I talked about that this week on the show. My question to the audience, and we had a very spirited, very lengthy conversation about it on the phones, was, does Michael Penix Jr. automatically get the keys back to the castle when he's healthy? I don't think the answer is 100% yes. I haven't seen anything from him.
And my issue is also, even if he does come back, like, because I don't think he's going to be back for the start of next season. So even if he does come back, maybe he's coming back a month and a half into the season. You're getting another 10 games. Like, will you effectively be able to say you have a good sample size? Because now it's like, all right, well, it was 10 games, but it was 10 games coming off of an injury and rehabbing.
Then the question becomes, what do you do? Do you go sign a Jacoby Brissett, who's proven to be a good backup in this league, and a guy that took over for Kyler Murray? Yeah. Do you go get a stopgap guy like a Gardner Minshew?
I've heard it thrown around. I like the idea of maybe trying to get Mac Jones if you can get him for relatively
cheap.
But
here's my problem with Mac Jones. Mac Jones plays well when he has good coaching around him.
That also leads back to the Falcons issues.
And
yes.
The Falcons do not. They may in the future, but when Mac Jones was in Jacksonville with bad coaching, he couldn't stay on the field.
Yeah, that is true.
When Mac Jones was in New England with decent coaching, he was pretty good.
He looked pretty good. He was a Pro Bowler.
And then now that he's in San Francisco with great coaching, looks pretty good.
Yeah, that tends to
happen. So he's a coach, and there's a lot of these in the league. He is a coaching-dependent quarterback.
How about a really wild card? Let's just get crazy. Trade for Kyler Murray.
Or Jameis?
Jameis in there? Oh, my goodness.
Just for a couple of games?
Do you ignite
the fan base?
Do you know how much fun our jobs would be if Jameis Winston was the quarterback here?
Very fun.
Oh, my goodness.
It would be nerve-wracking, but it would be
amazing.
No, I don't want any part of Kyler Murray. I don't like his attitude. And I don't like his game, frankly. He plays like he's playing backyard football.
He does, yeah.
Like,
he
doesn't play like he operates an offense. I don't want any part of that. Is there a guy out there that they really should look at that's, you know, borderline starter quality backup guy that makes a lot of sense to bring in?
I don't want to give Justin Fields a chance again.
No. Oh, God, no. Have you watched him in New York?
Yeah, no.
He had 40 passing yards in a game.
It's not been good.
It's awful.
All right, last one before we get out of here. So I don't know if you've heard about this new video game that's been taken over. It's called Dispatch.
No, I haven't heard of it.
So it's a game where it's a Telltale game. If you know the company.
What is it on?
It's a PC, so you can download it and stuff, but you can get it on Steam or whatever. But basically, you play as a guy who is I think you're a former superhero who had an injury or something. But essentially, you play a dispatcher for a superhero team. So basically, whenever there's something that's going on, you're the one who's like, all right, Batgirl, you're going here, and then Flash, you're going to go to DC. So basically, that leads me to my question. Which superhero team would you like to be the dispatcher for? Which one, basically, would you like to be, like, the general? And you're like, all right, we're going to send, you know, Superman to Metropolis to fight so-and-so.
Oh, this is
like
an easy question, and it's none of which you've named. It's the command chamber for the Power Rangers. That was the coolest place.
Okay.
You get the floating head Zordon alien.
Yeah, so you basically want to be Zordon.
Yeah.
That's a very good answer.
You sound the alarm, and then they're like superhero watches go ring.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you speak over the communication system and you tell them where to go.
Exactly. Yeah. So you want to be Zordon. I like that.
That's
I like
a
no-brainer
that. For
that's
me.
A good one. That's a good one. I didn't think about that. That's a really good
answer.
And
you get the crazy screaming robot in there too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my answer to that one. All right. Good stuff, Dom. When we get back, let's hear from the parties that we need to hear from before this one. And that, of course, is the HC and the new/old QB1, before we get out of here and throw things to Atlanta Hawks pregame, what is the messaging from Coach and QB ahead of this 7-game pivotal stretch here to decide the next regime of the Atlanta Falcons? We'll do that next on Chris Thomas Tonight. Before we get out of here on Chris Thomas Tonight with you for another 5 minutes or so, let's hear from Raheem Morris and Kirk Cousins on what we should be prepared for about both the state of the team and this game tomorrow that begins this 7-game stretch where the coaching staff and some of the players and certainly Kirk Cousins and Kyle Pitts are all going to try to put on a display to say, hey, you know, we deserve another shot at this thing either here in Atlanta or for guys like Kirk Cousins and Kyle Pitts that, hey, I deserve a shot to go somewhere else because the Falcons aren't paying $50-something million in a cap hit for Kirk Cousins to be back here next year and Kyle Pitts hasn't done enough here. But if he wants to ball out over these next 7 games, there's certainly a chance another team would pay him. So let's hear what Raheem Morris had to say this week. First thing he was talking about is accountability and where that goes when things aren't going right.
Coach is always going to say there's something you can do better, you know, timing, detail, discipline, whatever the case may be on the route concept, whatever it is. And the players never going to point the finger at the coach. They're always going to say they got to catch that ball, they can make that play, they can do those things. So, like, I think the whole thing is just the accountability of it all and all working together and being able to come together to make those plays. And like you just mentioned it, you know, we got a bunch of different opportunities out there with a bunch of different people and those things have to happen. And you have to make those plays. And there's sometimes where the person that's taking the blame is absolutely right. And then there's other times he's not. But you got to have the love and the feeling that you want to have a way of helping every single person. And like when I'm talking about our guys, when I'm talking about our guys in place, I take all of that. Like I got to be able to help those guys make those plays and get a chance to make them do it better. And why can we do it better? Giving them more reps, giving them more opportunities. How can you make those opportunities even better? Make it more competitive, make it as hard as you can possibly make it. And like you're always going to wear it on your sleeve. And with whoever dropped the ball, whoever didn't make the play, they're always going to wear it on their sleeve. And I think that's the signs of, like, the people you want to be around, the kind of character that you bring in the building.
Okay. Well, we'll see if that comes to fruition starting tomorrow. It certainly hasn't so far. And, again, I just think some of that messaging that's being preached right now is just sort of starting to fall on some deaf ears because the results aren't there. How many times can you say we're going to fix it, going to fix it, going to fix it, and then it doesn't get fixed? The next thing he was talking about is dealing with adjustments on game day when issues arise.
So it was the tale of two halves, right? You came out and it wasn't lighting you up. You were actually doing a great job of shutting them down, keeping it calm, and then there was some explosive plays happens. And that was the game of explosive plays. Made a big play at the end of the half. We ended up holding the three. Big explosive play to get down and holding the three. You come back out in the second half and they make a couple explosive plays that shouldn't happen. And it's based on getting tired, discipline, some calls. It's the same thing we just talked about. Like, it's all over the place. So you can be able to talk about those things with them. And, like, we got, like, an accountable group. So, like, if it was a player's fault, that player was able to say it, communicate it right away. When it was a coach's fault or a bad call, there's no shock around that either. So, like, when we are on that side of the ball and you're fighting, you did see a couple of great plays. There were too many explosives given up to allow them to get that many yards passing down the field. I mean, the two big fourth down stops at the end of the game. In those crutch situations, we turned the ball over on a kickoff, and they were able to go out there and get a four and out. I mean, there were some dynamic moments. So you can't say you were in the second half feeling desperate the whole time, but one too many big plays, particularly in the passing game, and that can't happen.
If I had a follow-up, it would have been, well, Coach, We're 11 weeks into the season, so can you please explain why there's conditioning issues, why there's coaching issues, why there's drop passes? Can you please explain those things to me, coach? And I think his answer would be, unfortunately, more of the same, because that's just what we hear. But ultimately, the accountability is going to fall on his shoulders. But he's just like, yeah, I mean, we're tired because the defense is on the field too much. Well, you know, we're not catching some balls that we need to catch. There's been some coaching issues. There's been some missed assignments. Why? Why is that happening 11 weeks into the season? That's what we need to understand. A couple more before we get out of here. Coach talking about how things look different now with the new QB1.
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
Right? So, like, you got to do all those things that he's done well in his past. You got to do all those things that you know he's capable of doing. And, like, he's been an up and under center quarterback for most of his career. He's done some things in the pistols, obviously, with us. Obviously, when he's under the center, he can have opens up play action for him that way. He's been of a keeper guy. But you want to do some things that he can do and some things that he's going to do well, right? And, like, we can do all of those things with him. And, like, we'll go out there. What he's done really well for us since he's been here when he got us to a 6-3 record is he was peppering completions all over the field. Pepper him to a point of a record, and like he can go out there and win in a bunch of different ways, but like we got to go out there and cater to him and do what he does best, and our football team's ready to do that.
Are they? Okay. All right, coach, we'll see you tomorrow. 4:25 kickoff. One more. We're ready to do that. That's a bold statement after the last 5 weeks. All right, before we get out of here, one from Kirko, just talking about what it means to be back as a starter.
Well, every time you go out, there's an opportunity, and you know, I kind of take that approach. Even if I had started, you know, 150 games, you're 151st. You take it as another opportunity to go, you know, out there and show you belong and play at your best. But never really took it for granted. But certainly when you're out for a little while and now you're back, you understand that it is a privilege to play. And you certainly want to make good on another opportunity.
Well, he's essentially fighting for his NFL life here, to showcase that he could still play in the league, whether it's as a productive backup or as a starter. So we'll see. It all starts tomorrow, this final 7-game stretch with the playoffs seemingly out of it, and barring a miracle run, you start to look at what's next for the coaching staff, for the players. What is the identity of this team going to look like? Kirk Cousins, Michael Penix Jr., Raheem Morris, Terry Fontenot, Zach Robinson, they're all a big part of the equation. Thanks to Dom. Thanks to Josh. Thanks to my guests, everybody who called in. Appreciate y'all. I'll talk to y'all tomorrow, right after the game, the post-game show on the Falcons flyover. Enjoy the Hawks. Let's go. Let's see if they can get a dub in New Orleans.